Welcome to another episode of the Marvel Cinematic Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Adam. And with me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Ryan, how's it going?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, thankfully, once again, it's a Friday. So I will always be happy with these days. And actually, for the first time in months, I actually had, well, the first couple days of the week were crap, but yesterday and today were actually rather decent. So I will take whatever goodness comes my way, especially in light of everything going on in the world right now.
Yeah, let's take the positives as they come and hope that the positive times outweigh the negative times. That's all you can. Yep. That's all you can do.
Silver linings. Look at silver linings whenever you can, if you can.
And comics are back, so that's always a good thing too. Speaking of comics, not speaking of comics, but we're talking about comic characters. We're going to continue our journey through the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and if my calculations are correct, we are, I believe, in 2011 now?
2010.
Or 10. Okay. We're in 2010, and we are going to be discussing Iron Man 2, once again starring Robert Downey Jr. as the one and only Tony Stark / Iron Man. You know what's interesting about this movie? First of all, what was your, when you knew Iron Man 2 was coming, especially after the success of the first one, what was your anticipation level for this one?
I mean, I remember I still wasn't really aware that we were building up to anything, so I was just kind of taking these movies just with X-Men, Fantastic Four, Spider-Man, just kind of taking them as we went along. And I was really excited to see it. I was, you know, actually like kind of went and found a comic book shop. I got some Iron Man versus Whiplash trade paperback that Marvel and all the companies on both sides love to do trade paperback collections like this. You know,
they do, yeah.
And actually, this was the first of the MCU movies that I initially saw by myself, because it came out when I was away from home at college. So actually I saw it by myself at college before I got around to seeing it with my dad.
Oh, well, at least you kept the tradition going with seeing it with your dad. So that's great. But yeah, for me, I mean, I really enjoyed the first one, as we talked about. So the idea of getting another one with Robert Downey Jr. returning was a great bit of news to me. I was looking forward to it, and then I was kind of like, I didn't know for sure, but after that end credit, the last, the two end credit scenes from Iron Man and then the Incredible Hulk, I was kind of excited to see where this is going, even though I didn't really, I wasn't really sure. Like, are we actually going to get this Avengers movie, or is it just wishful thinking, and it may be kind of scenario. So, but I was excited. I was looking forward to Scarlett Johansson joining the fray. That was intriguing to me, obviously. And I was intrigued by Mickey Rourke, because he had, I believe, just come off The Wrestler and all that buzz that he was getting from that, which also had Aunt May playing a stripper, which is kind of weird to say out loud, but here we are.
I forgot Marissa Tomei was...
Welcome to 2020, folks, where Aunt May was a stripper at one time when... And also kind of had a thing for Whiplash. But it's all connected, folks. So I was definitely excited, for sure. And you know what I find interesting about, having revisited the movie? I remember that one of the complaints that was prevalent after Iron Man 2 had come out was that it was just pretty much a PSA for the Avengers. And I don't think that's a valid complaint, actually, upon revisiting it. Because really, there's only three real true Avengers kind of connections. That one being, as I've said, Black Widow, played by Scarlett Johansson. The other being Nick Fury. And the third being Captain America's shield that you see in the placement of the movie at certain points. I mean, there was references to New Mexico, but until you see the post-credits scene, you don't really know what the hell they're talking about.
Yeah, so, but it's not like, you know, the shield or, you know, all this, you know, Avengers world building. Really, it's not like it took away from the
overall plot. Yeah,
to Tony's story.
No, so I thought that was overblown, though, the complaint. Yeah. Like, after having revisited it.
Yeah. And I, you know, I was not anywhere near the fan back then as I am now. So I didn't even know. I thought Black Widow, with all the trailers and whatnot, I thought they were setting her up to be a villain. So I did not even know at first until the reveal happens in the movie that she was part of S.H.I.E.L.D. I thought that she was going to be working alongside Whiplash, and that the villains of this would have been Whiplash and Black Widow.
Okay,
which I think some of the marketing tried to go that way.
Sure.
Because I remember hearing something about, like, for promo shots and for the trailers, they had to go in and digitally erase the S.H.I.E.L.D. emblem on Black Widow's costume so that it wouldn't be revealed. Or it wouldn't have been leaked that they were pretty much setting her up to be a member of the Avengers.
Yeah, fair enough. So I just wanted to point out that it wasn't as overt as people like to claim that it was. I really like the plot point of, you know, Whiplash being connected to Tony's father.
Mm-hmm.
Through his father, and you know how they worked together on the was it the repulsor technology back then?
Yeah, the arc reactor.
The big arc reactor
that is at Stark Industries headquarters that we saw in the first movie was really co-created by Howard Stark and Anton Fanko. What was it? Yeah, Anton. And this is okay.
Yes. What's that?
We'll call him Papa Vanko.
That's exactly. Yeah. No, so I really enjoyed the connection. And again, it goes back to Tony sort of having to work through not the sins of his father is the wrong phrase, but you know, the he had to deal with consequences that were a product of his father's work, in a sense. In the first one, it was weapons manufacturing, and here it's Vanko's father being fired. But we know why he got fired. But so we really, you know, Howard was justified in that sense. But still, it's Tony dealing with the aftermath of what his father did for him. That's part of what's causing him issue in present day, and that was I thought that was a good plot point. You know, where it seems like the early DCU films were about mothers, you know, the hero's relationship to their mothers, whereas with this we're getting the father kind of angle.
Marvel deals with dads, DC deals with moms.
Yeah,
and both are perfectly valid.
Right. I mean, if this was a comparison of who had the worst parent, I think Billy Batson still wins.
I still remember people posting Mother's Day stuff online and be like, to all the DC you know, mothers out there, except Billy Batson's mom.
Yeah, that was good. Man. But yeah, so I don't know. I picked up on that. That was a thing that I kind of looked at. But again, what I liked about it, and I want to get your opinion on this, is Tony's not only dealing with, you know, the consequences of his father's sort of business this time around. He's got his own problems, because he's the thing that is keeping him alive, right, is also slowly killing him. And I like that there is that hurdle that, yeah, he's got this great technology and it does wonders and all that, and you know, the whole nine yards, and it's given him even more fame and more, you know, everybody loves Iron Man at the start of this, except Justin Hammer, but we'll get into that. But you know, it's killing him, so he's trying to find a new element to be able to reverse the ill effects and keep him alive. What did you think of that? Because I liked in the first both of these films that you're seeing Tony have to deal, like, it's not all you for the rich man who seemingly has everything. Mm-hmm. He's having to deal with a crap ton of consequences.
Because what Tony did with Iron Man, you know, in the first Iron Man, and what's kind of like hinted at through newspaper clippings and what's talked about in the Senate hearing committee, what Tony did is change the paradigm for how the world operated. Yeah. You know, now, you know, Tony says the phrase, "I successfully privatized world peace," and government, the U.S. government, governments around the world don't know how to handle, you know, one person, you know, having, he's obviously not like Superman and the kind of paradigm shift Superman had, but this is the first person that is out publicly, you know, doing, you know, governments are unable to do. And we see that, you know, I think the countries were Russia, China, North Korea, all trying to create, you know, Justin Hammer, all trying to create their own, you know,
collusion.
their own versions of, well, Justin Hammer did collude with a Russian.
Right. So, I mean, foreshadowing.
You know, and I think Tony is doing the, I think we mentioned in the first, you know, at least maybe I did, in the first film, that Tony uses humor to kind of like mask as like a coping mechanism.
Right.
And yeah. I feel like, obviously, with, you know, not only the stress of being the superhero of the world, at least at this point,
yeah,
being the one and only, and, you know, with the element that powers the arc reactor killing, you know, it's why he turns to Boost. It's why he does the race in Monaco. You know what? Actually, as I'm saying this right now, I'm probably not on purpose, but it's just when Bruce in Dark Knight Returns does the car race as almost kind of, maybe a little suicidal.
Yeah.
At least, maybe not with that intention, but maybe with the in the back of your head mindset of, if this is how I die, this is how I die.
Right.
I'm wondering if Tony's kind of feeling this because of so much stress and so much going on, that's something that crosses his mind.
Oh, I can definitely see it, because he knows that, you know, according to his current situation, he was going to die at that point, right? So, it's a good observation for sure. And just you bringing up about the court situation and how, you know, there's a paradigm shift and he privatized, you know, world security and all that.
Mm-hmm.
For those people that say, you know, who like to lump all Marvel movies as popcorn fluff, with these early ones, you can't really say that,
yeah,
to be honest, because
phase one really does stand out.
Yeah. You see, they are tackling some serious issues, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that you highlighted that. So well done there.
For lack of, you know, it's not, you know, a straight up adaptation, but this movie is kind of a very loose adaptation of the Demon in the Bottle storyline.
Right. I wish they had taken that a little bit more impactfully.
I think maybe they were a little nervous to go full on with the alcoholism.
Yeah, because I think the Disney deal was in the works at that point in time. So I
think that's probably why we have the whole element subplot with the arc reactor, is because we can't fully do.
Yeah, well, it's the equivalent of the alcohol, because it's killing him. But
If you know the storyline that they were, you know, probably originally intending, you can kind of see that that's what they used as a cover.
Right, because there wasn't a kind of like an addiction to being Iron Man in a way,
mm-hmm.
Right? And so, but doing what he was doing in the suit, and feeding that, you know, that need to be humanity's superhero and all that was in essence, you know, killing him. So you're right, that was a good compromise, I guess. But the brief scene that they did deal with alcoholism, you see. The strain that it did put on the relationship of Tony and Pepper, but also the friendship of Tony and Rhodes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, there was one scene where he was kind of joking around when being drunk, but there were elements of seriousness there mm-hmm. present, and so. They did definitely touch on it for sure. What did you make of the whole? Because I did like Vanko as a villain in terms of, you know, visually he looks like a big brute who could whip your ass. But no pun intended. Actually, I didn't intend that. But I love that they kept his intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was one smart dude to be able to, you know, work mm-hmm. on all those designs and army, if you will.
He is the first person after Tony to be able to miniaturize the arc reactor.
Right. Yeah, and create all those hammer tech. Armored soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
I liked him as a villain. Mm-hmm. What did you think of Justin Hammer? I thought he was too. I don't know if saying he was too comedic, but I didn't. They made him and his technology, even when he had moments of triumph, they always played him off as a you know, a loser, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I can't really take him as a threat, you know, in terms of technologically or intelligence to Tony when they do all that. I think, you know, Sam Rockwell's great, but I don't know if he's the right guy to put in that role.
Yeah, I think this might be, well, going back to just Vanko and Whiplash for a second, I just want to say the visuals of electrified whips as a weapon,
yeah,
I love that.
Yeah, that was cool. I mean,
describe it, but I wish more villains kind of did stuff like that, because I thought that was cool.
Yeah, for sure.
As for Justin I'm with you. I think Rockwell does a fantastic job with what he's given.
Right, but what he's given isn't very good.
It's I know this might be a weird comparison, but it's just the one that comes to mind first. Yeah, it's kind of like Birds of Prey, Cassandra.
Yeah, I agree with that. The actress
does a great job with the movie role.
Yeah,
material that they're given, I don't think that these are the characters in the comics, and I'm not saying that's inherently a bad thing, but... Yeah.
No, that's a good comparison. I like that comparison. I actually, that's very well... You're on fire tonight so far. I agree with that for sure. We're progressing to, like, when you move on and you look at the dynamic of Pepper and Tony, like, you really see their relationship building, you know, from the first one. Again, very naturalistic. They argue, they bicker, and they have a banter that is very, very true to life.
People that don't necessarily have to be in love, but these are people that have known each other for quite a while, so they can probably get away with talking to each other this way, whereas not ever.
You can tell there's a love there. It's just not, it's like, mm-hmm. they're not in that puppy dog kind of phase where mm-hmm. you know, it's the be all end all, and that's the only thing I focus on, and mm-hmm. stuff like that. But so you see it, but again, it's building with each subsequent film, which I like. It's like a realistic relationship, and they're not calling, you know, she's not calling, there's no nickname, so he's not calling her Peppy, and she's not calling him Tin Man or some stupid, you know, there's no nickname. It's not like Batcat bullshit, which I appreciate. So it's a very realistic relationship, and I like it. I have to say that I couldn't stop laughing when they introduce Scarlett Johansson, and she's a member of Starkin, or her cover is that she's a member of Stark Industries' legal department.
Yeah,
and she comes in and she introduces herself, and of course, Tony's kind of fixated on her, which I can relate with Tony there, and he's in the middle of a boxing session with Happy, and then he tells her to get in the ring, and he's going there and talking with Pepper, and as he's watching, he's like, "Who is she?" And you know, Pepper's explaining. And then all of a sudden he's like, "I want one." I couldn't help but stop and say, "All right, two things. That would be so ostracized if it was a real situation nowadays. I mean, that would be all over Twitter, and he would be getting chastised, and they'd be calling for him to be fired just for saying something like that." And I was like, "Second, I agree. I want one too." And the third thing was, when he Googles her, I love the fact that it's actually just photo shoots that Scarlett Johansson's done.
But going into the movie, did you know much about the Black Widow character? Like, were you thinking along the same lines I was, that she was going to be one of the villains of the film and not end up being an ally?
Well, the problem with me was that I even back then I was reading, like, you know, the superhero news website, so I knew who she was playing.
Mm-hmm.
And I had limited knowledge of the character, so I knew she was sort of, quote-unquote, good, if you will. But, yeah, so there was never a case of, she could be working with Justin Hammer and Whiplash. I never thought that. So I knew she was, but I didn't have some intimate knowledge of her backstory or anything like that. I just knew that she was playing Black Widow, and
mm-hmm.
I didn't know when and where that would be revealed, but I knew that. So I didn't have the blissful the lack of knowledge about her that you had, which I wish I did, because that would have been a good surprise. Had I not known who she was, but, you know.
Well, because I remember thinking, who is this Black Widow character, and kind of doing, like, maybe, like, compared to nowadays, some half-assed research and being like, okay, this is a character that looks like she's been both good and bad, so I don't know which way they're going to do this.
Yeah, and see, the problem is I've been reading superhero website news things mm-hmm. for way too long. That's really the problem. But yeah, so yeah, no, but I, like I said, I really enjoy the fact that in that first movie, the first couple of appearances, I think, you don't really know much about her. And there's that air of mystery to her, which the Black Widow character actually does have. Like, she's in certain appearances that I've read of her, she's a very enigmatic character. I mean, I'm assuming we'll find out more about her whenever we see the Black Widow movie. God knows when that is, but
Well, if you're an NBA player, you get to see it soon.
yeah, but you're also exposed to you're also in an area where the concentration of the virus is at an all-time high. So, what's the trade-off? I mean, there's even limits to my enjoyment of Scarlett Johansson's Black Widow. And if I was an NBA player, I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to play in that environment. No, thanks. I'll pass. But yeah, that's just me. But yeah, I mean, certain people have the fortune of seeing it early. But yeah, so I'm assuming we'll get to know more of her backstory. But I like that even to this day, we really don't know a hell of a lot about her. It's one of the few Marvel characters that we've been introduced that we don't have, a basic dossier on. Unless, again, you could cheat and read the comics, but a Black Widow solo book is not something that I would particularly read religiously. So I'm. In the case of her, unless I read a ton of spoilers between now and when the movie comes out, I am blissfully ignorant, and I'm okay with that about her. But I did like her for her first appearance, and in case I know Steven is listening because he God bless him, he actually listens to that podcast. He's not on, but yes, Steven. Scarlett Johansson is on the list. There you go. I know you're not getting the number because you have to wait till I reveal all that. I don't even know what number it is. That's true. But
Do
she's on the
you
list. What's that?
even know the number?
I don't know where she would fit in my multiverse-wise list. But I do have basically, I know the top 10. I've got that straightened out. Or a good facsimile of it. So, things change depending on what's going on. If a certain person is in the forefront of the entertainment news, maybe depending on what it's for. Like, I mean, if they're in the news for an Alison Mack situation, then they drop it down the list, obviously, or get removed because that's just freaky shit. But if they have some prominence in the news cycle, or I'm in the or let's say I've just watched Batman Returns, hey. Michelle Pfeiffer may be higher, or Scarlett Johansson may be higher if I've just watched Iron Man 2. So you never so that changes. But I know a general I have a general top five, top 10 order. I'm hoping this will be done by August, but I get no promises. The audience are like, oh, just reveal the list already. We're getting tired of hearing this shit. I mean, Stephen likes it; he gets entertained by it. So. Yeah, there's that. You gotta keep one of the co-hosts entertained. Stephen and I keep you entertained via our private text with our banter with the online miscreants.
By noon, I'm looking down at my phone. I have like 20 notifications between the two of you. I'm like, oh God, what the hell have they been up to?
It's pretty fun. It's pretty. We keep Ryan.
Yeah,
keep Ryan entertained.
I can't leave these two alone for
Yeah,
5 minutes.
he's the adult in the group and he's the younger one. I like that. It's funny how that worked.
Always starting fights on.
He's like the Wonder Woman of the group because as she said, I work with children. That's basically Ryan every time he looks down at his phone. But no, okay. So back to Iron Man 2. Okay. So let's address since it's a topical topic. Let's address the situation of Rhodes, Rhodey. Obviously, he was recast in this movie, and he went from Terrence Howard to Don Cheadle, and they did not, create a character for the purpose of the movie and put them in the War Machine armor. Batwoman? No, they actually just recast the character, had a throwaway line,
Because that's what you
and
do.
that was the end of it. And
I,
it works.
when it comes to what's been going on with Batwoman on TV, I have multiple times pointed to Iron Man 2 and be like, this is how you handle it. Yeah, maybe have a character be surprised to see, another character that looks different than their first appearance, but then just have that person be like, it's okay, it's me, I'm here, let's just move on.
Right.
And then you go on with your story.
Yeah, and the same thing happened with Mark Ruffalo, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was one line that sort of quasi connected it to
Yeah,
the
we
Incredible Hulk.
have in Avengers, we have Mark Ruffalo talk about, breaking Harlem. And it's like, okay, there's this kind of,
Yeah, or
pretext.
something. Yeah, and then there was a line about the subway too, which was also part of the fun, a reference to.
But
But
whereas what's going on with Batwoman, frustrates me because they can't just listen to the fans and just recast.
yeah.
I think Cheadle works so much better
I agree.
than Cap.
I 100% agree. Yeah.
Because it just Cheadle feels much more comfortable doing a role like this. He doesn't feel as out of place.
For a second, I thought you said Cheetah, and I'm like, wait a minute, we're talking about Wonder Woman 1984? When did this happen?
Oh, we're not talking about Kristen Wiig.
Okay. No, but I agree with you. Don Cheadle is much better. You know what it is? For his for Rhodey's position in the army, I think Don Cheadle pulls that off better than Terrence Howard. Like,
Yes.
if I was in that division of the army, and Don Cheadle was my supervisor, I'd listen to him. If Terrence Howard was my supervisor, I'd laugh at him. He doesn't seem authoritative to me.
No, it Cheadle just looks better, in the army garb. It the War Machine armor, it just looked
Oh yeah, it was.
It looks better on Don Cheadle than, I can't imagine Terrence Howard in the scenes. The way that Rhodey is portrayed in this movie, I'm sorry, I can't really see Howard being able to pull it off convincingly.
Yeah, so that was much better. And even though it was a different actor, the banter and the back and forth, it made it feel like they've been friends for quite a while. And you believe that. At least I did. So I think that was a good casting choice, and I think he did wonderful in the role, and I'd like to see mark me down for somebody that would like a War Machine Disney Plus series.
Yeah, I think that might be in, being discussed, because
In the realm of possibility, yeah.
because I really hope we get more of, as long as Cheadle wants to do it, I want to see more of Rhodey going
Right.
forward post Iron Man.
I agreed, agreed. So what did you think of let's get, because I think it's an important plot. So I mean, it is an important plot, but so when Tony creates the new element that essentially saves his life, it does two things. First of all, it shows really how intelligent Tony Stark is. And I love it because, yeah, he relies a lot on his tech, but he builds that tech. So it's not just, stick me in a suit of armor that somebody else made, and I'll go with it. He's doing the legwork, which so I like that balance of reliance on technology, but also being the creator of said technology. And again, they double down on Tony's intelligence. It's a shame that he's gone, but I could have seen this version of Tony Stark being part of Marvel's Illuminati. And 100% believing it.
That is one thing I'm gonna be like, I'm all for, at the end of the day, you know, tell the story you want to tell and all that. But going forward into the MCU, one of the things that I am most bummed about is that we're not going to have a scene with Tony and Reed Richards together.
Or, yeah, like I said, imagine a movie involving that group of, you know, Tony, Reed, Dr. Strange, T'Challa, Professor X. Now that we finally have Professor X available, I mean, that would be, I mean, can we just, can we have a scene where Tony recorded a hologram of himself so he can have a conversation with those guys in a secret, you know, that would be cool. Come on. Come on, Kevin Feige, make that happen. That's all I'm saying. How much money can you throw at Robert Downey Jr.?
Yeah, I think we made a mistake.
Just pretend he's a stripper and throw a bunch of money at him. That's all. He'll come back. I know. But
not like that Doolittle franchise is going anywhere.
talk about a failure. That's right up there with Catwoman.
Sherlock Holmes looks like it might be good, but
you know where your bread and butter is, Robert. Mm-hmm. Probably somewhere in your fridge, but the other bread and butter is you know the Iron Man franchise, the character. It emphasizes how smart he is, but I love the connection and the bond that it sort of created between him and his father. Like, it mended that fence for Tony.
No, I'm not going to lie. I was okay with that whole subplot. It had a lot of gorgeous visual. I love the idea that Howard discovered the element.
Yeah.
But he didn't. He was, like he says in the videos, he was limited by the technology of the day and he couldn't make it. He couldn't manufacture it, but he knew that it could be synthesized.
Yeah.
How it happened, you know, with the whole laser thing and the, I'm not going to lie, that was, it looked cool.
Yeah.
I don't understand how any of it worked.
Right.
I was just like, okay, he shot a laser at something and new element. Like, okay.
Yeah, my head, I was thinking, I don't think that's how that works.
It's just like,
I'm not sure that's how that works.
Out of everything in the movie, I think to me that was a stumble. Obviously not bad enough for me to badmouth it, but it's just like a...
To be fair, I didn't pay much attention in science class, so I don't know. We could be totally off. But
I didn't know we could just shoot lasers at things and make new elements. Okay.
If that's the case, can we get Tony Stark on the COVID situation? Because I don't know.
He'd have a cure by now. he would have had a cure and a vaccine back in May.
All it would have been was lasers.
We're just gonna shoot lasers at everybody.
And then Trump would be like, "Oh, lasers work. Why don't we just inject lasers into our skin?" Oh, Christ. What an idiot. Anyway.
This is the guy that thinks that we can inject sunlight into ourselves.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So what's why not try lasers? What do we got to lose?
God.
Hashtag, what do we got to lose, Ryan?
Everything.
Yeah. Oh, boy. But I liked it. What I liked about that scene was not the science that was kind of nonsensical, but again, the fact that it brings him and his father together, it also, I think, is that kind of new common ground is eventually paid off in, you see that in Endgame, when he goes in the past and has an interaction with his father. Because the only reason he's able to say, you know, the dialogue of, Tony is telling Howard, you know, you're doing your best and your son don't know that you love him and all that 9 yards. The only reason he's able to say that kind of stuff is because he had this experience in Iron Man 2. So I like that it eventually continues to pay off later down the line. And also, just as Tony's father left him videos, it's bittersweet that Tony does the same thing for his daughter at the end of Endgame, although it's a holographic video, but I digress, you know, it's the same idea applies. And so, yeah, I like that, you know, things, because of the seeds planted here, come full circle later on. One of the things I did have a problem, okay, so let's get into the action scenes now. First of all, I think one of the best suit-up moments for me has to be at the Monaco Grand Prix. I mean, coming out of the suitcase like that.
That is one of my all-time favorite armor suit-ups still to this day, is that suitcase wrapping itself around him.
And I do like the little silver touch, because it's a it's a nod to his first armor, his second armor, and now, you know, it's melding with the modern and stuff. So I do like the color schematic, but also, like you said, just the way it comes out of the suit. Was fun. And the whole fight in Monaco where you know, he fights Whiplash for the first time. That was really cool. What's with these villains interrupting sporting events? Like you know, Whiplash does that. Bane interrupts the football game. Jeez, don't they have any respect for?
Zod's "You are not alone" message interrupts Clark watching a baseball game.
Well, I know, like, Jesus, save your end of the world crap for after the game, damn it.
If I had any, I like the fight scenes.
Yeah.
In this, like Tony versus, you know, the all the drones and War Machine, you know, under the control of Vanko. I absolutely loved all that. I love the fight between Tony and Rhodey in the house.
Yes, that was a great one. I love that. Yeah.
It's the two Whiplash fights at Monaco and then at the Expo in the beefier armored suit. Those don't last long. And that's my complaint. It's like, I thought that they're real cool visuals. Again, it's all with the it's all with the electrified whips. That is a cool villain visual.
Of course, yeah.
But I just felt like both of those fights seemed to like wrap up in like a minute. And that's my complaint. That it's like the fights between Iron Man and the main villain of this movie, they're over real quickly. They don't last long.
So I really, my two favorite quote unquote fights are the first one and the one with Rhodey in the house. Now, I do like seeing Tony and War Machine team up.
Oh, yes. I absolutely loved it.
It was great. The only, again, like you're echoing, you know, they did such a good job at the beginning of building up Vanko as this, you know, menacing threat, both physically and mentally. But then every time he fights Tony, he loses within seconds.
Exactly. Yeah. It's.
So it's a little bit of a.
I don't know. It's just one of those weird things where it's like, you know, what we get is awesome, badass, looks cool, but it's like we've been kind of hammering for the last couple of minutes. It's over like within a minute. Like, I'm sure if I timed each fight, they're probably
They're under 10 minutes.
Oh God, I wouldn't even say under 10 minutes. I would say maybe each fight, Monaco and Expo, is maybe only 2 minutes long or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Either way, they're too short.
Yeah.
And it's a shame, because, like I said, Vanko was being built up as such a great threat.
Yeah.
On two fronts, not just one. So it's a shame. And if you think about it, even Obadiah Stane had a better showing in the third act of the first Iron Man against Tony. And actually got the upper hand on him with that device, remember? at one point. Whereas Vanko never really got the upper hand.
The only time that happened was when he was in control of the drones, just to over. The Black Widow fight.
I did enjoy it.
That was awesome.
She's badass. They really positioned her very strong. And it comes outside of her operating as a Black Widow as S.H.I.E.L.D. because they show that she's got some fighting skill when she's having that sparring session with Happy. I mean, I don't know why, but on my initial watch back in 2010, I never noticed that. Okay, I was probably mesmerized by Scarlett Johansson. That's probably why I never noticed that. But I never noticed that she took Happy down like that with that head scissors kind of maneuver. That was pretty cool. She was badass. I really liked her inclusion. And of course, her fighting prowess only escalated as her film appearances continued.
Mm-hmm.
So visually the action scenes were great. But they were just way too short. And I think it short changes Whiplash as a character, I think.
There was a lot of potential that I think was just kind of...
This goes back to the quote-unquote villain problem that Marvel had early on. It kind of shows you that a bit. Like, this is one of the instances where you can make that claim and not be wrong in this instance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else you want to mention? I think we've covered, most of the main talking points, unless there's anything we forgot.
Other than, I do think, and I'll kind of use this to build up into like a grade or something.
Yeah.
But I do think, maybe as a whole, there's a lot to love about Iron Man 2. I do think that it is... I understand why some people may put it at the lower end of a spectrum for the MCU movies.
Sure.
Because I do think maybe on a whole it is a tad bit weaker than the first one, because it is trying to do a lot. I think that it does it all successfully. To me personally, like, the world building and all that does
overall,
not.
Overall,
I do think this is more maligned than it has any reason to be. Obviously, as we've talked about, there are some flaws. We just spent a good amount of time talking about how the action scenes were a little short, a little too short for our liking, but still, what we got was good, just short. We wanted more. The whole thing with the, creating the element, visually appealing, but just science, I guess. Just shout, have Tony shout science, and okay. I mean, this is a guy that will eventually end up making a nanotech Iron Man suit, so a laser is nothing.
Hashtag lasers.
But I do think that this is still very enjoyable. I would probably give it... I would give it a solid 8.
Okay, we're doing... Solid, I was going to say, what are we doing? Numbers or letters?
I always go back and forth because I don't remember.
We should really check that before we do the next episode. all right, since you said 8, I'll go with the number as well. Look, overall, I enjoyed myself watching this movie the first time around and the second time around. It doesn't have the complaint about being, I don't think the complaint about it being an Avengers commercial is valid. I think Robert Downey Jr. is once again fantastic as Tony Stark and Iron Man. I think Gwyneth Paltrow as Pepper ups her game and is, feels more comfortable in the role than she did necessarily the first time around. As we said, Don Cheadle is an upgrade, and no offense to Terrence Howard, but he's an upgrade over Terrence Howard. Like I said, I think that with a cast, and I think Scarlett Johansson, really, I find it hard to picture anybody else playing that character at this point. Mm-hmm. So I think that was solid casting, and she has that good balance of alluringly sexy and incredibly badass that I think is part of Black Widow's mystique. I really like her in the role. And again, I like the banter between Tony and we didn't talk about it much, but between Tony and Nick Fury with the whole, I'm confused. Should I look into your eye or the patch? You know, that kind of banter is really funny. So I like that, all that. My biggest problems were the pacing of the action scenes. Mm-hmm. And I think the two villains, first of all, I thought Justin Hammer was played as a joke from the get-go, really, and it never recovered. And I think Whiplash got short as physically and mentally imposing as they built him up, and as impressive as the whips, the electrical whips looked. I think the pacing of the fighting and the fight sequences let that character down as well. And so those were my problems with the film. If I had to give it, overall, like you said, it's probably on the lower tier of MCU movies for me, but I still had a really good time and really enjoyed watching it. And I'm glad that it's part of the saga for sure. So if I had to give it a number grade, I'd probably go. I'm going with a 7.5 out of 10. That's my grade for it. So that's that. And of course, there was the end tag that lets us know that the next film that we're going to be doing, and that you, if you want to follow along with us, is the first Thor movie, which was released in 2011. So I was on my way to the right year. So that's the one we're doing next, the next time you hear us. So if you want to watch along before we get there, do so. But Ryan, if it's going to be kind of hard, but if people want to continue the conversation, if people want to continue the conversation with you, where can they sort of do that?
I mean, if you want to, you can now find me on Facebook. Look under Ryan Heelsman. Because as of this recording...
By the time they hear this, you might be back, but...
Yeah, we'll see. It's likely. But as of this recording... I'm a little bit of a Twitter social media self-imposed exile. I just kind of needed some, for a variety of reasons I'm not getting into right here. Yeah. I just wanted to take a little bit of time off.
He's social distancing from social media.
There we go. That should be.
Yeah.
There we go.
Gonna copyright that shit.
Copyright it. Put it on a shirt.
Yeah. Why not? If
you want to get a hold of me, go contact Adam.
Yeah, okay. Basically, what he's telling you to do is go to the Multiverse Musings Facebook page,
There we go. There.
And tag Ryan. Direct your post to Ryan, and Ryan will see it. And if you're nice, he'll answer you. If you're not, he won't. But don't you people dare make him leave Facebook, because I need to get a hold of this guy for podcast recordings. And if he disappears from there, you won't be hearing this podcast, because how the hell am I going to get a hold of him? So be nice on Facebook if you do encounter Ryan at the group. So what I suggest you do, if you do want to interact with Ryan for the time being, while he's on his social distance from social media, go to the Multiverse Musings podcast Facebook page, ask for acceptance into the group, and one of my co-hosting cohorts will add you there, or myself will add you there, and we'll continue the conversation there. I'm still on social media because I use the block button a lot, so you know it's part of the fun. But if you're not blocked and you want to talk to me, you can do that on Twitter at @Adam_LeafsFan. But we hope you enjoyed this episode. We hope you enjoyed the look back into Iron Man 2. And we hope you're excited to get to the first film featuring Thor, also aptly named Thor. But until next time, we hope you enjoyed this episode. And we hope you will join us next time. And we want you to remember that Iron Man is forever. From his first appearance to an AC/DC song to his last.
Oh my God.
So long, everybody.
Take care, everybody. Stay safe out there.